That is a fantastic theme song. Welcome to the Geek and Gamer Guild podcast. It is the grand return, and we are doing something a little different this time. We are going to be rewatching the HBO series Westworld from beginning to end, but with hindsight. That's right. I have watched the entirety of Westworld, the first season. It was amazing, and it's one of those series that you need to watch twice, but we just don't have the time to do it normally. So I'm going to go ahead and take that work on myself. Now, today we're going to be doing the very first episode, the pilot episode of Westworld. And obviously this podcast is going to have a shit ton of spoilers for the first season, maybe some speculation on what might happen in the second season. So if you have not watched Westworld, please go ahead and do that. The entirety of it, not just this episode, because I'm going to be going through a lot of things that we learned through the first season, looking at some of the Easter eggs and looking at some of the ramifications and what possibly we could be seeing in the future, as well as going through scene by scene on the episode itself to give a kind of a review in case you've forgotten a little bit. Before we get into that, though, got a little housekeeping to do. As always, the Geek and Gamer Guild is brought to you by the Questionable Endeavor Network. Visit questendnetwork.com for information on all of our podcasts available under the Questionable Endeavor Network banner. Visit the website for articles and streaming videos about wrestling, horror, gaming, and more. If you are a fan of horror, I would advise you to go check out the Slasher Sanitarium. That is my other podcast that I do. For reviews of horror movies and TV, the most recent episode was on The Thing, the John Carpenter original. Or you can check out our serial horror podcast, The Shadowvane Podcast, which is now in Season 2. 1692 The Risen is the story of this season. If you have never heard of the Shadowvane Podcast before, please go binge watch the first season, which is a all-encompassing story, Progenic Labs. And the Shadowvane Podcast right now is in the process of trying to put out a couple of in-between episodes while the rest of the season is recorded. And the most recent one that I saw, if I'm not mistaken, was a Classic Tales of Terror, where one of our fine voice actors reads a, at this point, probably public domain story. But yes, classic stories, usually Edgar Allan Poe, those kinds of things. Just a really nice kind of thing to tide you over until the next episode of The Risen. If you are a fan of anime, check out Tuning Japanese, who just dropped a new episode. This one is also a special episode, a little in-between one while they're in the middle of doing Trigun, in which the boys talk about the episode title is Make Team Rocket Great Again. So it looks like we're going to be talking a little bit of Pokemon on that one. Actually, that would be Pokemon Generations Episode 6. So it's been kind of a little thing they're doing in between when they can't get together themselves. Usually Andy and his partner, I can't see if he's there on or not on that, but Ray is usually on there. Ray lends a different take than the rest of the boys normally do. Really refreshing. Go ahead and check that out. If you are a fan of wrestling, we've got you covered. Check out the Rundown Podcast. It's a weekly show reviewing the current WWE product. I might be on the next episode. It depends on how comatose or not I am. But I'm sure the next one will be a Royal Rumble preview episode. And also you can check out the Raw Attitude Podcast, which is a chronicle of the Monday Night Raw episodes from the Attitude Era. The most recent episode that just went out actually took care of the first two fights in the Brawl for All, as well as the King of the Ring, and actually had Adam from the Rundown Podcast on there as well. That is hosted by Henry Hugepex, the suplex throwing human duplex. We also have a brand new member of our show, the New Blood Rising Podcast. They are currently doing ECW pay-per-views from the original ECW, back in the Paul Heyman days, before that they were the watered-down version that WWE did. If you like this podcast, though, you should check out Pwn Stars. They actually also had an episode drop today. Looks like they're getting a little sexual on it, because they are going to start objectifying some men. But you can check that podcast out as well. Like, as I said, it just came out. It's Pawn Stars, PWN Stars. And as well, we are a very growing podcast network here. There is a ladybug on my pop filter, so that should be interesting. But you can check out our host podcast, The Questionable Endeavor, or just Questionable Endeavor, I should say. The host podcast, get out of here, bug, is one where, since we have such a stable of hosts on our network, we're able to get a couple of them together and talk about different subjects. There's one episode out so far for that, and that one is there. We did a personality test for the majority of the hosts, and I get kind of made fun of a little bit on it, but that's nothing new to me. And finally, email the show, geekandgamerguild@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Geek and Gamer, or like our Facebook page. If you wish to sponsor the Geek and Gamer Guild, please head to www.advertisecast.com/823. And now let's get into the episode proper here. So Westworld Episode 1. And we start off with an intro sequence, which we've really seen a resurgence of these in the past couple of years now, where for the longest time, that time was kind of shaved away, either by not having an intro sequence or by just having a title card of the show. But this here, we get a fantastic intro sequence that not only puts you in the mood, but also gives you just a little bit of a background on to what you're actually watching as well. So the intro sequence itself, a couple different shots of a horse and human being constructed, kind of flipping back and forth between those two things. We get a shot of an eye that shows a reflection of a mountain, and we see a set of hands playing a piano, and that great intro music that you heard at the beginning of this episode is playing over it. Two people are being created while they are boning, which seems like a bad use of time when you're trying to create people. We get a gun being created, and then we see it being fired, and it is being held by a woman on horseback, as that is also being created. We see the hands lift off the piano, and that we see that it's actually a player piano. And that is kind of a great clue to the show that you're watching, where these hands, these robot hands, realize that they're not actually doing the playing on this. Kind of a nice kind of undertone where it's the robot becoming sentient and realizing, hey, you know, this isn't right. So that's really cool. So the episode starts with what we will later find out is Arnold saying, bring her back online. We see that Dolores is sitting in the maintenance room, and we hear a conversation between Arnold and Dolores. Now, this conversation is going to recur throughout the season, and we are actually going to see it in its entirety at the end of the season. But after... after hearing Arnold ask if she wants to wake up from this dream, it's apparent that what we are getting here is kind of the groundwork for the main mystery of it. So we see Dolores is covered in blood with a fly buzzing around her face. We will later find out that she cannot actually kill this fly at this time because of the fact that each one of the hosts have a prime kind of directive, a prime programming that prevents them from actually killing anything. And it's a weird differentiation because it's not harming anything, because they are able to inflict a little bit of pain to an extent onto the guests, but they are not able to kill. So the Arnold conversation is going to continue to crop up, but this is the first right off the bat we start getting it. It's really cool to really still really hear that this started actually in the first episode too, because I didn't think it did. But so we get Dolores waking up. She says hi to Peter on her way out. And then we get the player piano starting up. And this player piano is really cool. They actually created it for the show so that they'd be able to put their own music into it, which I thought was a known player piano anyways, but maybe that's not how they work anymore. But they're going to use this to great effect because we get a lot of different songs from our time made into kind of play piano riffs, and there's going to be really good use of that later in this episode too. So Dolores is asked by the newcomers, or is asked about the newcomers and how she feels about them, And we cut directly to Teddy Flood on the train. Now, we know Teddy is not a newcomer, but it is a nice kind of segue to make the audience believe that he is human. We have nothing to say that he's not, and we actually have evidence to say that he is at this point. Obviously, we know he's not. But the conversation is going on next to him, where a guy is talking about being a white hat or a black hat. So first time we hear that conversation, we'll get a lot more on that. Obviously, white hat is playing the park as a good guy. Black hat is playing it as a bad guy. And you can do whichever one you want. We're going to see later that William gets the opportunity as well. It seems kind of odd that they give him a choice of hat right off the bat, considering that William changes halfway through his journey on if he wants to be a white hat or a black hat. You know, people can make their kind of decisions however they want to on this. But the white hat, black hat situation was an old Western thing that they used to do where all the good guys wore white hats, all the bad guys wore black hats. Just so you know who the good guys and bad guys were. Not a necessary thing anymore because, and I don't think it's really a necessary thing back in the day as well, because I think the audience was smart enough to know the difference just by the actions alone. But anytime I hear that someone brought their family to the park, I just cringe because that's what this guy is talking about. You know, he's talking about when he brought his family here, he went straight white hat. And they were in the way. Well, why'd you bring your family to a park that you can rape and kill people, man? And what's the rules on that anyways? Do we have to worry about a 14-year-old kid finding a prostitute and just going to town on them? Or do we have to worry about a 12-year-old shooting some guy in the face or watching people die around them? We see things happen in Sweetwater in this episode right off the bat that we know that shit goes down even here, and this is supposed to be kind of like the most tame area. Don't bring your kids to the rape and murder park. The idea of going straight evil or straight good really dives into the video game aspect of this park. We've gotten a couple of video games now since then that have given you the opportunity to play as a good guy or a bad guy, depending on how you want and seeing your different actions play out from there. But it's really cool. This is essentially just a live-action video game. So we get Teddy coming off the train, and another couple asks, talks about how expensive the place is. Just a lot of world-building. And we see the Sweetwater in all its majesty. And Teddy goes walking through. He sees a couple of kids fucking with a sleeping host. I think it's a host. And we get the guy who bumps into Teddy on the regular. And the sheriff is looking for people to recruit for the Hector storyline. And he asked Teddy, which I always thought was kind of strange, simply because of the fact that, a lot of this, this first time through is kind of played to trick the audience a little bit. From here on out, we see that things, they interact with each other a little bit differently, but they, a lot of these hosts should know Teddy. And it seems like a lot of them don't, and they actually treat him like he is a guest. Which is kind of strange, but I'll let it pass. But Teddy goes to the bar and Clementine approaches him. And, Clementine does her little, you're new here, not much of a rind on you. We get a lot of this stuff simply so that we can see it the next time through and see the improvisation that the hosts are actually programmed with. Again, having the host pretend that Teddy is a visitor, or pretending that he's, in their world, that he's a newcomer when he has backstory with a lot of them, and he is somebody that obviously used to live in Sweetwater, so the fact that you would think the horrors, they know everybody, but apparently not Teddy. We get Dolores, and, she greets Teddy, says that he's coming back. It's the first clue that Teddy is a host, because obviously Dolores would not know any guests, would not remember any of them. So Teddy and Dolores head out, and we get a conversation about the Judas steer. And this here is one of the big things where I feel like it might be coming back in season 2, because the whole thing of the Judas steer, the one steer that leads the rest of them to slaughter. You don't kill the Judas steer because you use that steer again and again to continue to lead the livestock to their doom. And it's something that's talked about quite a bit throughout the series, enough so that I do feel that we're going to see something come out where somebody's either going to be called it, or we're going to find out that maybe Dolores is, or somebody is the Judas Steer in the host world. So again, all of this is playing out without a guest in sight, which seems very, very wasteful. We kind of wave it off later on in the series when Ford talks about, you know, them practicing on each other, but there's a ton of it. I mean, you know, Teddy drinking whiskey from the bar and stuff like that. It's like, that seems really wasteful because, you know, he's ingesting that and he doesn't need to. And again, there was nobody there at all. If anyone were to, you know, come upon these two in the middle of this conversation here, I don't know how it would play out exactly, but sure. Two of them come back at night, and we hear shots from the Abernathy house. Teddy springs into action, and we get the Milk Bandits attacking Peter. Peter is killed, and again, this is two hosts killing two other hosts, and there's nobody around. In comes Teddy. He winds up killing the Milk Bandits. So four hosts are dead, zero guests to see it. Dolores arrives to find Peter dead. Then we get the first appearance of the Man in Black. Now, when I refer to, we know this is William. Now, when I refer to Ed Harris, it's going to be as the Man in Black. The present day William is the Man in Black. And when we have Jimmy Simpson as the 30 years ago William, he'll be William. It's the only way I can keep it straight, because of the fact that if I'm calling Ed Harris William in this episode because Jimmy Simpson doesn't appear, then the next week I start saying, oh, old William or young William. It's just better to call Ed Harris the Man in Black, Jimmy Simpson William. But they're the same guy. So William says hello again, bitch slaps his Dolores, and says he's been coming here for 30 years and she still doesn't remember him, so obviously, you know, that's clue number one that, you know, this guy's been coming here for 30 years. We're going to get in the second episode because we're not introduced to William yet until, I believe, the second episode is when he comes up. Maybe the third, but I think it's the second. But great first sign that William is the Man in Black is the fact that, you know, we get this 30 years thing. We get William talking about it later that, you know, there's a lot of timeline things, but the amount of time that's passed is important. So William allows, I called him William, the Man in Black allows Teddy to shoot him, which of course doesn't kill him because, you know, William knows that that's not going to. But we do see in the second or third episode that these bullets do hurt. They leave a bruise, but Man in Black doesn't even flinch when this thing hits him. But he lets Teddy shoot him a couple times, and William lets the audience know that Teddy is a host. You know, he talks about, I don't know why they paired some of you guys off, so you're like, oh, shit. Really cool. When I first watched this, my jaw hit the floor, because that was a really cool moment where it's like we just spent, like, 15 minutes pretending that Cyclops is a human, only to find out, nope, he's a host. That's not going to be the last time that we have a person we thought was a human as a host. So, you know, the Man in Black is already pretty over this. He allows Teddy to keep shooting him, but once he gets close enough, we finally see the Good Samaritan program take effect, because Teddy no longer can pull the trigger because Man in Black is too close and it could actually kill him. So, really cool way to present it without coming right out and talking about the Good Samaritan program says that the hosts cannot kill a human. So, but William turns around, starts walking away. Once the Man in Black is far enough away, Teddy starts firing at him again. Man in Black blows Teddy away, grabs Dolores, rapes her. We're done. So cut to the next day, and Dolores wakes back up like nothing happened. Teddy is on the train again, and we start all over again. Two women on the train seem to know that Teddy is a host. I'm not sure how they know that, unless maybe they've been there before, but they're talking as if, like, they haven't been. But I guess, I mean, it's a pilot episode, a little bit more hand-holding than before. Maybe if he didn't get the fact that, oh, you know, Teddy is not a human that just got resurrected on a train, he's a bot. So we sweep a shot of the park as we pull out into Mission Control. So we get lots of world building here, literally, because we see the Turks are creating horses. One of them is sanding down a horse's fur, and good God, that's got to stink. We have some diagnostic tests and different techs working throughout this thing. We get our first shot of some tits because it's HBO. And then we come into Bernard and Elsie sitting with a naked Clementine. They are observing her reveries. That's not a cute term for her titties. The reveries are the memory of past events and the reason all this shit's about to go down. So Ford put in the reveries where they are able to somewhat access past memories, and it causes them to have more human reactions to certain things. So it's a little bit of like trying to falsely create instincts. But yeah, I mean, Shannon Woodward, great in this series. I hope that she's alive. There's going to be, once we get to that episode, there's going to be a lot of clues as to her actually being alive still. But she's awesome in this. Jeffrey Wright is amazing as well. Jeffrey Wright is really amazing in pretty much everything I've ever seen a guy in. He just has that presence about him. But Elsie calls into question the ability to access memories that are wiped, and she should be worried, because that's a weird thing to do. We see her gaze travel down to Clementine's tits before a warning noise goes off, and there is a livestock problem. Bernard goes to check it out, and we get the first of many times that people will do things that they shouldn't do while sitting in glass rooms. Everyone can see you. Now, this is not as egregious as the season finale, where we literally have a guy jerking off with a glass room while his friend is working on another host behind him. But we get Ellie kissing Clementine, which can't be all that much fun considering Glenn is sitting there frozen. And I think that would just be like kissing someone who's passed out or a dead body. Not that I would know on either count. Sublevel 83 has a disturbance. Ashley Stubbs, who is the lesser known Hemsworth brother, kind of does a dick thing here because he's worked here long enough that he should know that Bernard has a dead kid. Considering that is Bernard's core programming, essentially, is to kind of, you know, be sad about having a dead kid. But Ashley says if you had kids at home, you know, you'd understand. But Ashley is the only one that's smart enough to be wary of the hosts. And hearing Bernard talk about the hosts not being able to hurt people while standing 5 feet away from the woman he will later kill, not only is eerie, it's very fun. Just because of the fact that there's so many times that Bernard is so sure that there's nothing can happen when he, in fact, is one of them. So Stubbs is already talking about a rebellion, but Bernard says, if it's one of mine, maybe I can help. And that line's got to be intentional. You know, if it's one of mine, maybe I can help. Well, you know, they kind of play it off as Teresa says, oh, once they're done in cold storage, they're no longer yours. But I feel like that's kind of an Arnold line. So the tactical team should really not be feared, as we know that pretty much all of them are going to be killed at the end of the season. And they do not do a good job. So we get another thing that kind of seemed like it was going to be important and never really was. And we get that the cooling system in cold storage is broken. So the elevator door is open, a bunch of water pours in, but nothing ever really comes of it. And I don't know if it's just to kind of make the place look really creepy, or if it is something that was supposed to play a role and was rewritten, or if it's going to play a role later on. But the whole, you know, cooling system being down thing, I thought something more was going to happen with it, but nothing really did. So we go through, we get a bunch of shots of naked hosts, and they play up a little bit of the zombie aspect of this, where some of the hosts are kind of decomposing. They're all just standing, staring straight ahead. And we see that Ford is talking to Old Bill. Old Bill is the second oldest host. I think we find out that Dolores is the oldest, but for whatever reason, they decided to not continue to update Old Bill and put him into cold storage here. Old Bill cannot pass the Turing test. Now, the Turing test is the ability for an AI to fool a person into believing that the AI is human. But even in this conversation here, we see Old Bill, you know, he glitches out. He definitely makes a lot of noises while he moves. That's not really anything to do with the Turing test, but he doesn't understand all the references that Ford makes, and so he just kind of improvises and draws on his own programming on it. But it's a nice way for us to see how far they've come, but also to see, you know, that Ford's got a little sentimentality about him. So we get our first audio command. A deep and dreamless slumber is what Ford says to Old Bill, and he freezes. So Ford talks about creating Old Bill and asks, were you with us then, or was that before your time, to Bernard? And it's not the last time that we're going to hear that line, but it's another great hint that Bernard is Arnold, because, you know, the were you with us then, or was that before your time, is, we know there was some time between, you know, Arnold getting killed by Dolores and Bernard being created, and enough so, you know, and obviously everything leading up to that before that is, you know, before Arnold's time, because he wasn't created yet. So now comes a super creepy moment where Old Bill zips himself into a body bag. It's a great visual, but you get another kind of audio clue. They do a great job of building the world here and showing us little things without coming right out and saying it. So we get that there are audio commands that the bots will actually, go about doing, instead of having them punch into a computer for every little thing. So we cut over to another new morning, and Dolores is heading out again, still running the Milk Bandit storyline, I see. And more of Teddy running the same dude. This time it's a little different. You know, they say so much without... why did I even put that in there? I don't know why I did that. Oh, yeah, they say so much without saying anything. This is just another example of them, you know, showing that that there's little improvisation, that there are little things that can skip things off track. More so in the next scene where they were showing that, you know, Teddy goes through the same thing with Clementine, but this time Mauve doesn't say anything to him because she is talking to a bunch of Asian cowboys, so she doesn't get to do her little monologue. Teddy gets interrupted by a random guest before he can get to Dolores. Of course, Teddy doesn't recognize him, but they recognize him. And the can from Dolores is picked up by the Man in Black this time. So Man in Black plays along before saying he has other plans and fucks right off. She seems confused, but her program makes her not think about it too much. And the Man in Black sits down with Kissy. Now, sadly, the actor who played Kissy died before filming anything other than the pilot, because there was a brief bit of time between the pilot and them recording the rest of the season. Not sure if he would have played a bigger role, or any role for that matter. And he also didn't get to see his final, you know, appearance, which really sucks. He does a great job in this one episode alone. So we cut over to the guys who took the Hector mission. The woman does not seem very happy about it. But we get... I lost my place. We get the guy, you know, he's talking to the sheriff. They find a dead body. And the sheriff starts to break down mid-sentence. Side of his face droops. He starts making a choking noise. And then we quick cut over to Lee Sizemore. And he is running off his mouth about the sheriff going mental, talking about, you know, his storyline's getting fucked up. Teresa wants to pull 200 hosts and have them checked out and everything like that. Lee goes apeshit, saying, you know, them killing a host here and there, you know, that his storylines can recover. But pulling 200 hosts puts everything into chaos. Bernard starts being really creepy, and he asks if he can record Teresa's angry face, which again has led to speculation that Teresa was going to be replaced by a host, and while it still can happen, it seems more like they're going with, you know, she's dead, she's done. So we cut over to the guests who are having fun with Teddy, some more nudity in here, really ripped black guy. Who seems to say, you know, that he finds Teddy creepy, and Teddy is staring off into space, which is pretty creepy, but they kind of say if they get bored of him, they'll just use him for target practice. So we get a lot of this where, we're supposed to feel for Teddy, you know, as a host, because these people can do the stuff to them, and you know, but at right now, you know, Teddy's not sentient, so he's going to forget anything that happens to him. So it's kind of hard to feel bad for what's going to happen to him here and there. But you know, it plays a lot into, you know, what constitutes, you know, going too far with the host, you know, using him for target practice is a shitty thing to do, but is it really that bad because they're not going to remember, or is it bad because, you know, at the moment they're feeling pain and everything, and that, you know, that's kind of the key of the series as well, is to think about some of these things like that. So Dolores is painting a picture in the middle of a field, which leads me to wonder how many of these exact duplicate pictures are out there. And three guests wander by. A little kid goes up to Dolores and he asks her if she is one of them, and says she's not real. She kind of freaks out and starts to leave, which is kind of a dick move, kid. But not exactly the reaction I was thinking was going to happen whenever these kinds of things happen, because they're obviously, you know, programmed that way to know, you know, that this question is going to come up, and to either, you know, find a different way to play it off or whatever, but she just kind of runs off. Peter is out on the ranch, and he finds a picture of William's wife buried in the dirt. Now, we will find out that this picture fell from William's porch 30 years ago. So this has probably not been sitting here for 30 years. This was most likely placed here by Ford to start up his grandmaster plan at the end of it. And obviously he would use William because he knows the man in black is running around as well. Peter asks Dolores to look at it, and we get our very first "doesn't look like anything to me" line. Now, the "doesn't look like anything to me" has really taken off. It's, you know, it's kind of the key to the show. It's the most memorable line from the show so far. It's also become a great meme online, but, you know. So Peter asks where the woman is standing. Doesn't look like anything to me. So here's the great mystery of the series. You know, what is management's plan? Because we cut over to Teresa and Lee, and they're having a conversation about, you know, what happens with Ford. There's going to be a lot of these conversations that happen between these two, where Teresa kind of hints at there being a bigger master plan, other than just getting rid of Ford, but what they're going to do with the park after they get rid of Ford. And we get, you know, a little bit with Charlotte and the board, but we don't really know what their plan is after they get rid of Ford. Because it doesn't seem like it's just about taking over the park or trying to take things into more control. I hope we get more of it next season, but considering that the board has just been shot to pieces, I don't know what we're going to do. So we get Black Hole Sun playing on the player piano, which is great. And I would love to know why the man in black can just run around killing hosts at night. I know that he essentially owns the place. He's a high-ranking board member. He is essentially who buried them out of bankruptcy troubles 30 years ago. But it's the middle of the night. He just walks up and just slits Kissy's throat. So Bernard is, you know, is talking with a host, and he says, "I envy your forgetfulness," which is another, a lot of these conversations in hindsight, once you watch this again with Bernard talking to hosts or talking about hosts, is just really surreal. So we get, the little milk bandit has gone off his rocker. He's talking to Arnold about they're not going to kill me this time, while he's pouring milk over different hosts. We will find out that he is remembering hosts that have killed him in the past, actually. So he is getting revenge on them before they can kill him. So Little Melky is still running around despite being shot. We get a great kind of, you know, Looney Tunes moment of him drinking milk and it coming out of his chest. So we see that he has killed Simon from The Walking Dead, who's kind of the main milk bandit. And he starts to pour the milk into Simon's mouth. And I don't know how they did this. I don't know if they CGI'd it or what, but I don't think I'd be able to lay still and have someone pour milk in my mouth and not react at all, because that was pretty cool. So everything freezes and Ashley comes in. So we know that Little Melky is not fully awake. because those kinds of commands don't work on the people once they have learned, you know, who they really are. But Teresa comes up with a plan to have all of the updated hosts killed in a shootout and pulled in for a rollback. Ford and Bernard have a conversation where we have Ford sitting there watching a robot getting constructed. Ford's hair is kind of crazy in this scene, which I thought was odd. But Ford talks about evolution through mistakes. Considering that Ford is presented as a bad guy most of the series, listening to him talk about his grand plan for the, you know, in the first episode is kind of crazy. You know, he talks about, you know, maybe one day we can resurrect the dead, and there's definitely kind of a change in his voice and a nod towards Bernard. Very sneaky for the show to do. But yeah, we get Ford talking about, you know, mistakes we made, and you know, we evolved because of grand mistakes after grand mistakes. So really kind of showing that, hey, you know, this guy that you're going to think is a bad guy right up until the end, not really. He is trying to have these hosts evolve. So Ford is just like, yeah, cool, go ahead, let him roll back, because he knows the damage is already done, and that's not going to do much to it. So we cut over to Kissy being bled dry by the man in black. He shows that he knows how much blood a host can lose, which is fine, sure, maybe he figured that out. But I don't know how he stopped the bleeding that Kissy was doing, or knew when to stop to know how much blood was left in him, but hey, whatever. Especially because Kissy gets up and immediately falls to the ground and more blood falls off of him. You would think maybe that was, you know, one little bite too much. I don't remember if we ever get to really know why Kissy was chosen. We get a little bit of the fact that, you know, the people of Native American and Mexican descent here have been kind of programmed with the religion of the maze and the texts as part of their religion as well. But it seems, you know, why does the man in black know that Kissy should be the one that he goes to first? But again, we get our first reference to the game and the maze. And this is going to be a big one. It, to me, was maybe a little bit of a letdown in the grand scheme because they built it up so much and they had so many times that, you know, the maze popped back up again. But, you know, it wasn't as important to the series as I thought it was going to be because, you know, the maze is just how the bots, you know, become sentient. So we go over to Peter, and he says, I have a question you are not supposed to ask. And we know, obviously, that, you know, the hosts are not supposed to ask about what their situation is and what they are. So we get a call from Mama Abernathy. We never actually see Mama at all. I don't know if she exists or not. But Abernathy grabs Dolores and says, hell is empty, and all the devils are here. He also whispers in her ear, these violent delights have violent ends. We don't actually hear this right now. We will later on. So we do not know right now if that is a verbal command, because there are other people who hear it and nothing happens with them. It could still be a verbal command just with certain hosts that are programmed or certain, again, you know, it kind of goes back to, we find out later that anyone who is built with a backstory of loss in their life, you know, it gives them the kind of foundation to be sentient. So maybe that's why that line works. Or maybe that line is just something that, you know, kind of plays through as just a really cool line to say. I don't know. But we go over to Hector and his posse, and they enter the town. You know, we see that Lee is looking over the action. He's very excited to hear Hector's speech. And we get one of the coolest music cues as Painted Black starts playing on the player piano. Hector starts to perforate the town as the guests look on, and the scene, again, I can just keep going on about how magnificent it is. Hector Armistead and the rest of her crew are playing Shooting Gallery while an orchestra plays Painted Black, and this is honestly the moment that I just fell in love with the show. I thought, this is it, man. I am hooked in. Strap me into the show, because this scene right here, you know, just, It's great. I can't say enough about it. So the future Peter Abernathy gets blown away, which I'm talking about the bartender, Maeve and Hector share a little bit of a moment, and Hector doesn't kill her, which I thought was kind of funny, especially considering how their paths are going to cross later on. So Teddy gets shot thanks to Dolores, dick move Dolores, and we see that Save is dragged outside by the sheriff's horse, and after Hector goes outside, Tenderloin, who's one of Hector's men, who is also the dude from Rob Zombie's 31 who got stabbed like 27 times and they still couldn't kill him, and then he died like a bitch, tries to, spoiler alert, tries to rape Clementine, but then gets his entire face blown off, which is a really cool scene. Also calls a lot of question into how the hosts are constructed, but I don't care because it was so cool. Hector begins his monologue, but he gets maybe two lines into it, and he gets shot in the neck by the guy who took the Hector storyline from before. Armistice kind of doesn't know how to react to it. She gets blown away as well, and we get upset Lee Sizemore. So Tubby Guy is definitely getting fucked tonight because his wife is extremely into it now, seeing him shoot these two people. So now we've got a lot of these hosts have been shot, so we know that they're going to be pulled away. And we get Elsie dressed up as a town doctor, and she gives Dolores the verbal command of, "You may rest in a deep and dreamless slumber." A little different from Ford's original cue before, but it's kind of cool to see the evolution there. Bernard and Teresa head over to Peter Abernathy as Stubbs talks to Dolores. He gives some verbal commands to calm Dolores down, which, again, the acting on this is so superb, where these actors have to go from being completely emotional to just nothing. Straight face, no emotion whatsoever. They have to change the, you know, in Dolores' case, she has to change her accent back and forth through a lot of this as well. It takes a lot. I mean, this is putting, you know, a lot of these actors into a position where they've got to really be on their game, and they deliver. So Stubbs has a very similar conversation with Dolores that Arnold had, showing that, you know, Arnold kind of built the framework for a lot of these conversations after certain situations like this happen. You know, Stubbs asks her if she ever questions the nature of her world, you know, asks if she wants to wake from the dream, things like that. So Ford comes in with Bernard and Teresa. Ford is much more kempt here. His hair is nice and kind of slicked back and everything in that. So Ford talks to Peter, and Abernathy starts quoting Shakespeare. And again, this scene is just amazing. Lewis Hertham is superb in this scene. Again, he's got to cut back and forth, not only between like the emotion of nothingness, but also between his Abernathy character, a Shakespearean character, and his kind of host character. He just is flipping from them bit by bit here. Really great. So Peter gives us just chilling monologue where he claims that he wants revenge on Ford and Bernard. It's another kind of tick in the category, or in the column of Arnold as Bernard. And of course, you know, Peter has been around long enough to know that Bernard is Arnold. He probably would recognize him if he's able to access that aspect of his memory. So we get our very first hint that there are other parks in Westworld, because they're talking about Abernathy being used in a murder dinner party. And he was the professor who liked to quote Shakespeare. So obviously we know that there are other parks here. And there's definitely one maybe that takes place somewhat in our time, maybe our time, not their time, or at least something, you know, sometime after Shakespearean times. Which I know Shakespearean times was before the Old West, but the way that they were making it talk about a murder-death dinner party doesn't seem like something that would happen in the Old West, so I just feel like it's from a different time period. So Dolores gets a clean bill of health, and we see the Wonder Twins performing a lobotomy on Peter. That's Felix and Sylvester, who we know will play a bigger role later in the season. We also see now that the bartender has replaced Peter, and that Peter and the Little Milk Bandit are the only ones that are going to cold storage, so everyone else was checked out. Teddy wakes up and grabs his chest, which, again, like, that's where he was shot, so, but it seems like it's a little bit of a red herring, and maybe he just kind of grabbed it, because we know that Teddy ain't woke right now. He, you know, and he will not be by the end of the season either. Maybe a little bit more now. But We get William showing us that the maze is imprinted on the top of Kissy's skull, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but whatever, who gives a shit? And again, I don't know why anyone has bothered to question why the man in black just scalped a fucker. And they're just like, okay, I guess we're just going to have to replace that. You think they would wonder where that scalp went? Because he carries it around for a long time. So, after all of the shots of flies landing on hosts, we end the episode with Dolores having a fly land on her and her killing it. So, just right off the bat, you're like, okay, this is it. We know she is definitely different and she is changing. And that is fantastic. So that is the first episode. And like I said, I'm going to be going through all of them. We got a couple of hints. We're going to get more and more as we go along here in terms of hints of what's going on and hints of what might be coming in the second season. But for sure, check back with us again when we have the second episode of Westworld. I'm hoping by the end of February to have that out. I'm hoping to maybe turn this into a bi-weekly podcast instead of a whenever the fuck I have time to do podcast, but we'll see how it goes. But until then, we will see you next time.